Welcome to another episode of the On Call Nightmares podcast. My name is Jay, and once again, welcome to Infrastructure Week. And this week we're talking to people who are involved in building and monitoring, observing, and telling you how infrastructure works for them and their stories of being on call. So this week I was lucky enough to also have on the podcast Charity Majors of Honeycomb. She is the CEO and co-founder. So thank you very much, Charity, for your time. I really thought it was a cool conversation, and I hope you get something from the time we got to spend talking. Speaking of getting together and talking, I'd like to continue to get together and talk with all of you. I've got some really cool interviews lined up, but I'd like to get even more. So if you would like to be on this podcast, why don't you go ahead and send me an email. It's oncallnightmares@gmail.com. You can also send me a tweet. It's @oncallnightmare or just @jdestro. Any of them are fine. Feel free to get in touch with me. And I'm going to be at SREcon coming up in a few months. So if you're going to be at SREcon in Brooklyn and you maybe want to have a conversation, maybe a few of us can have a group therapy session and talk about our experiences on call. Maybe we can learn something from one another. So let's get into the interview with Charity. All right, we'll be right back. Hi, this is Jay, and welcome back to the On Call Nightmares podcast. This week, we have someone for what I'm calling Infrastructure Week, someone that I feel that has really been a huge part of building infrastructure on the internet and really giving people better ideas on how to make sure it remains online. So I'm speaking today with Charity Majors, who is the co-founder and the CEO of Honeycomb. She's come through some really amazing places like Parse and was an engineering manager at Facebook. And one of the things that I can really say I remember because of my time at MongoDB, she built the world's first Mongo on Rocks deployment in production. And you like something, Charity, that I can really appreciate, which is whiskey and scotch. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for taking the time to be with me today.
Totally. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So if people who are listening don't already know about some of your background, one of the things I'd like to kind of start introducing them to is where you really walked into the industry and ended up on call first.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've kind of made my career out of being an operations or infrastructure engineer who likes to join companies very early. Mm-hmm. I like to be the first one. Bunch of software engineers have an idea and it's kind of maybe about to start to be a real thing with real users. That's when I really like to come in and help make it grow up, right?
Absolutely.
And I've done that at a bunch of places. I've done that at Linden Lab. I did that at a couple other startups I've never heard of. And then I did it at Parse. But I really like to, build the infrastructure, then start building the team. And, by the time everything is working well, that's about time for me to move on. So the way that I got into this is kind of odd. I was homeschooled in Northern Idaho, and I had a music scholarship, which is how I made it to college. But I grew up very poor, and when I got to college and realized that I would be poor forever if I continued doing music, I decided not to do that.
This is a very similar story to mine, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and so I spent a lot of time in the computer lab. I had a crush on a boy and ended up there a lot. And I really enjoyed Linux. It was I've always liked writing, and the language of the command line really appealed to me. I don't think I ever would have gotten into computers if it had just been point and click. So interesting. But I ran computers for the lab, computer science lab, and then for the entire university. This was back before they realized that students probably should never root. And then I got bribed to drop out of college and came down to San Francisco when I was 17. I've been here ever since.
That's amazing. You've had quite a story. And I can say that I was one of those people as well who kind of came from a place where I wasn't really well off and didn't really have any other future unless the computer could give it to me.
And computers for a long time. This has been an industry where if you're curious and you work hard, and you're just interested and passionate about it, you could just create a very lucrative and awesome career for yourself with very little in the way of credentials. And it makes me a little sad that we seem to be losing that.
Yeah, I remember, and I'm getting back into when I first came in, and that's around 2000 when people were looking for bodies. And
and that's if you really could write HTML, they're like hired.
Yep.
A lot of us were incredibly underqualified, and we got jobs and we learned on the job and everything was great.
And I've always likened it to the fact that after the dot-com bubble burst, people like yourself, myself, who were really young, we were seen as like, hey, we can mold you into something that's going to be up all the time, taking care of our problems. And that's at least what happened to me.
Sorry, I don't follow. What?
Oh, I was kind of like put into situations very, very early on where they just said, you know what? There's a problem. You fix it. And when it's fixed, let me know. So would be, you know, sometimes being online for hours and hours online on issues.
Yep. Yep. But I loved it. I threw myself into those. I really liked those problems.
Yeah. I think that those are the problems that really give you the experience to start moving into more complicated things. Because I think when you find something broken, it gives you a lot of time to pick it apart and learn. I'd like to ask you to give me a second to just explain the rules of the podcast. I always explain it every episode. So one, during the kind of story that you may tell about being on call or anything like that, don't incriminate yourself, don't incriminate others, and just help us learn.
What does that mean?
Oh, well, when I say don't incriminate yourself, if, you know, something really bad happened and maybe let's stick blameless, if we will. That's basically where I come from. Is I try not to be, you know, well, this was because of the customer doing this. What I like to try to do is think of it from the whole.
Okay, but I do like to trace the chain of events sometimes.
Sure, that's fine. If you feel comfortable letting us a little bit more into the information, then I
think statute of limitations, dude. It's fine.
Fair. That's awesome. Thank you. Cool. So, is there a specific on-call incident that really stands out to you that helped you kind of learn a lot about what ops is all about?
Sure. What ops is all about? I'm not sure I understand the question, but I'll answer a different one. Outage that stands out the most in my mind for my entire career was one to deal with MySQL. This is around the time of MySQL, when we were trying to make the upgrade from 4.1 to 5.0, or 5.1 actually. Mm-hmm. And the first time, this is at Linden Lab, and you know, we had this ginormous, there was one primary, and then there were like chained replicate, like there were some relay-only replicators, and mm-hmm. I think there were like 20, 30 odd, you know, we called them slaves in that time, all chaining off of this one poor primary, and we had upgraded all. Well, first of all, we just naively were like, okay, well, the benchmarks show us that it's faster. We're just going to mm-hmm. upgrade. And we did. We upgraded. And then the grid went down for the better part of a day. And
oh boy.
We could not figure out what it was. We tried. At first, we thought that, you know, people were, you know, we needed to do like a velvet rope type thing. We thought everyone was trying to log in at once, and that was making it so it could never come back up, which was part of the problem. Battled it for a day, day and a half. And finally, we realized we were going to have to roll back. Now, there was no way to replicate a 4.1 primary secondary off of a 5.0 primary. So that meant we were going to lose over a day and a half of data.
Nice.
The single worst outage of my entire life. It really hurt. So, you know, we rolled back. The whole thing was down for almost 2 days. Like the whole thing. This is the company that's making, you know, almost $100 million a year. And out of that, you know, we all kind of just like fell scarred and bleeding. We're like, okay, what's the plan? Like, we have to upgrade. What are we going to do about it? And the outcome of this was that I went out for a year and built a software testing apparatus that would, you know, capture 24 hours worth of all of the traffic that went to the primary and then replay it with varying levels of concurrency and so forth, and reconstruct the transactions and replay it against, you know, another piece of hardware so that I could test every permutation of every change in the config file, every change in, you know, hardware to figure out, because it was clear to us that although the benchmark said it was faster, it actually wasn't. It just couldn't keep up with the traffic. So I went off for like almost a year and spent like half my time building this test framework and then testing everything about it. And I finally tracked it down to, it was slower for our workload. It was about 15 to 25% slower for our workload, but not for any of the test benchmark workloads, of course, because they all showed that they were faster, but it was slower for our workload. And to fix it, I was playing around with the then very experimental Google and Percona patches that allowed you to parallelize work on the CPUs,
sure.
Spread it out across multiple CPUs, and a couple of, you know, NODB config file tweaks, and was able to get the 5.1 version from 15-25% slower up to almost 20% faster on the same hardware. So we upgraded all of the secondaries, but everybody was just so scared to upgrade the price. Everybody just hung back. And I, you know, it was like about Thanksgiving time. And I was like, it's ready. Like, I swear to you on my mother's grave. My mother's not dead. I swear to you on my life. This is ready. I've tested everything. And they wouldn't do it. They were too scared. And I was so angry. I was like, yeah, I promise. Whatever. Fine. They did it finally after the new year. They upgraded, and it took like, I actually wrote a blog post about it at the time because it was like 6 seconds of outage. It was seamless. It was beautiful. And we had no problems. The funny coda to the story is 6 months after that, we got SSDs, and all of that work was absolutely pointless.
Oh, boy. It's those spinning disks sure were fun, weren't
spinning
they?
Spinning Rust. Don't run a database on them.
Yeah, I got a chance to learn a lot about that early on, especially with MySQL and with all the caching we should have put in place in some places we didn't. We learned really, really hard lessons. And it sounds like one of the cool things that you really took from this, and I'm going to just guess, is that by doing that really deep dive and looking to create as many points of data on what's going on, you're able to really determine whether it was slower or faster. And I think that that's pretty incredible.
Well, it taught me a lot of lessons about data databases. And up to this point, I had never really, I mean, I'd run plenty of databases in production, but this was kind of the start of my interest and fascination with data, because I love it because this is where shit gets real. You know, you can do whatever the fuck you want with, you know, APIs and throwing all these packets around from place to place. But as soon as it hits disk, then it's real. This is where, you know, I talk and think a lot about, testing and production, and about, you know, where you should be conservative and where you should be, you know, let people roam free and play. And the closer you get to laying bits down a disk, the more conservative and the more paranoid you always have to be, because your data is your business. Your data is, you know, the beating heart of your company. Your data is your customers. Crazy. You can't fuck with it. And mistakes that are made at the data layer have a tendency to be pretty permanent. They also have a tendency to be very subtle and sneak in when you're not looking at them. So it's this really, like, it seeded my entire interest in databases, which continues till today for sure.
Yeah, persistent storage was kind of like the same thing for me. Anything that, you know, we knew had to be any place.
Got to stop playing. Stop playing. Yeah. It's a database.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people, they ask about, you know, testing and stuff. And database upgrades of this sort are the only time when you need this sort of intense, paranoid outlook. You know, most problems you can roll back from. You shouldn't be, you know, doing this for almost every product out there. You know, nothing you can ever say is universal. But, you know, for most places, the systems should be architected to absorb more risk and more levels of failure than we really consider. Like, we have this idea that our systems are sitting there working. They're not. Dear God.
There's something wrong
there. They're sitting there in a state of partial degradation their entire lives, right? And if you don't know about it, just means your tools aren't good enough. And like, this embrace of resiliency is part of what I think signals the shift to modern computing. You know, in a LAMP stack, when you had time series aggregates and dashboards, you know, in a database, you could pretty much, you know, just like put your feet up and go, yep, everything's up, everything's working. It wasn't, but it was close enough to true. Now, if you, like, working at Facebook scale, if you went around, like, you know, freaking out about every error you saw, you'd never get to sit down at your desk. It's a whole different story. It's more about the thresholds at which an error becomes evident to users and therefore meaningful to you.
Yeah, I've started having more conversations with people at events. Like, I went to DevOps Days last week, and one of the things that, you know, really was a great thing that people were talking about, and I hear it more and more, and Matter of fact, Liz was in a meeting that I was in, and one of the cool things that we talked about was how, you know, the templatizing of alerts is not good. And it never really was good because it made people chase after things that might have just been coincidental.
It's terrible. People are overpaging themselves across the board. Like, everybody has set up all these like elaborate apparatuses of paging alerts on every threshold for every. It's fucking ridiculous. And, you know, the reason they do it is because they don't have tools that they can trust to explore their systems. And so they rely on these page bombs, these clusters of things to go off just to like try and indicate to them which part of the system might be in trouble. It's such an anti-pattern.
And it's why I really like, and I don't want to just plug the product, but I really do want to say that one of the things that your company, Honeycomb, has kind of been up to was giving people greater looks into what is actually wrong, as opposed to, hey, we're using more memory than usual, la, la, la.
Yeah. Which is it's not even just what's wrong, but what's happening. You know, a lot of times, like, we've kind of trained engineers to only go look at their systems when something might be broken, which is terrible. You know, we should be knee deep in production every day. Every software engineer out there who ships code should have muscle memory that when they ship it, they go look at it. Did what they expected to do actually happen? Does it look reasonable? Does anything look weird? We would catch upwards of 80% of all problems that ever hit prod immediately if we just did that. But instead, people have cultivated this sense of fear around production, which is not healthy.
Yeah, I think that some of the things I got to hear you speak a little bit at ChaosConf this year, and one of the things I really gleaned from it and from a lot of the other conversations is that you should test in prod, that you should look for things in your production
stack. Well, it's not even that, it's that you are. You can't avoid it. You can't not do it. Like, every time you ship something, there's something unknown about it that you're testing. You're testing, if nothing else, you're testing that. A combination of that build artifact, that point in time, that infrastructure at that point in time, and those deploy scripts or software, or whatever. Like, anybody who's ever typoed production knows that there's only so much you can test.
Yes, those fingers can get fat at times, and then you realize, oh shit, what did I do?
That was an unknown. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to start leading us to the end because I really do appreciate your time. And I know that you've got tons to do. And I really do enjoy having this convo because these convos are great. We learn so much from people.
We didn't even start on the worst war stories.
I can get, if you want to give me another rough
fine.
One.
It's fine. Don't worry.
Cool. So let's go databases is this question. If you are, say, an SRE or a person who's on call currently and focused on databases, what's the piece of information you would share to them?
What's the piece of information I would share to them? Well,
just some advice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason that I made Honeycomb really dates back to running all those MongoDB databases at Parse. Mm-hmm. It's funny because most people buy Honeycomb and use Honeycomb to, you know, introspect their code as it's hitting production, hitting users. But the thing that made me fall in love with it was database queries. Because, you know, Parse mobile backend as a service, you know, engineers could just in their mobile apps write a query and upload it, and I just had to make it work, right? Mm-hmm. Make it work next to all the noisy neighbors, and, you know, they might accidentally do a full table, like a 5x full table scan, just like, make it work. There was this tool, and we were losing ground. Like, we were having a lot of reliability issues because it would take us, you know, people would come and be like, Parse is down. I'd be like, Parse is not down. Like, behold my wall full of dashboards. They are all green. Right. Because maybe they're Disney, right. And Disney's doing 4 requests per second and I'm doing 100,000 requests per second. It never shows up. Having the ability to, you know, sample the queries that these people were writing in and then do things like, you know, add up all of the write lock that's being spent on this database right now and then break down by user ID. Oh, this guy's taking up 92% of the write lock on this node. It was pretty much impossible to do that kind of thing with any other tool out there because other tools are all focused around metrics. Turns out you really need events. You need to be able to have all that connective tissue that says that this query had this host, this username, you know, all of these things were true at once. All of these things described this one query. And when you've broken them up into disparate metrics, you've lost that. Mm-hmm. And I learned later that Scuba, which is the Facebook software that Honeycomb is based off of. Scuba was originally hacked up overnight to deal with Facebook's MySQL scaling problems a decade ago. And that's why it's so congruent. It's so well made for database introspection. Awesome. Yeah.
Very awesome. Fun. Great. So obviously we want people to go and check out honeycomb.io for all their observability information that they want to glean on their.
If you need to understand your code in production as users are trying to interact with it, yes.
Absolutely. And then if you would like to check out Charity and her stream of great, great information that she shares and a combination of that and shit posting and everything people do on Twitter, check out Mipsy Tipsy. I really appreciate the combination of both MIPS processors and a whiskey here and there. So thank you very much for a few minutes, Charity. I really do appreciate it. And is there anything else you'd like to share with people before we take it to the end?
Just one thing, which is that a lot of people are like, ooh, you know, Honeycomb sounds great, but my developers aren't there yet. In fact, the way that you're doing things now is the hard way. Honeycomb is the easy way. And because right now, you know, we've got dashboards that take so much submerged intuition to try and ascertain what is even going on underneath the covers. And when you could just be simply asking the question, it'd be so much easier.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Charity. We'll be right back with our end of the podcast. We'll see you then. That about wraps it up for this episode. Thanks for listening to Infrastructure Week. Thanks very much to Charity Majors of Honeycomb. You can check out Honeycomb at honeycomb.io. You can find Charity on Twitter. She is at Mipsy Tipsy on Twitter. Great feed. You can get a lot of interesting information. So thanks a lot for tuning in, and we'll be back next, hopefully next week. We won't have two episodes, but it will be more interviews with technologists about their experiences being on call.